When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Ted Lasso welcome wagon has arrived.
Ted!
So, you're heavily favored this weekend. You think this'll end your embarrassing streak of draws?
Lloyd, I've never been embarrassed about having streaks in my draws. You know, it's all part of growing up.
I got a question for you. Has a team a la us ever won the whole chimichanga?
Not for 40 years.
Oh!
No, you don't come through here. That's fine. Yeah, I got you.
It's like Dukes of Hazzards. Y'all probably call it the Earls of Risk over here. It's a terror
of knowing what this world is about. We go Webster. Watching some good friends.
I think it's time for these young fellas to meet that guy.
Oh, no. Let that up.
You little turd birds, start touching your toes. And touch each other's toes.
What?
Last week, the hit Apple TV Plus series Ted Lasso earned 20 Emmy nominations, the most for a comedy series. The debut season of the series, which follows Jason Sudeikis as an American football coach hired to coach a Premier League soccer team, offer just the right combination of comedy, heart, and hope to win over pandemic audiences, and its nominations included 2 for editing. Editor A.J. Cataline is nominated for the Hope That Kills You episode, and Melissa McCoy for the episode titled Make Rebecca Great Again. It's the first Emmy nomination for both editors. In today's conversation, Melissa and A.J. take us behind the scenes of the making of the series, share their favorite scenes, and give us a preview of what is to come when Ted, Roy, Rebecca, and the rest of the characters return for season 2. I'm Carolyn Giardina. Welcome to the Hollywood Reporter's Behind the Screen. So Melissa and AJ, welcome, and thank you for joining us, and congratulations on your nominations.
Thank you. Woo! Thank you. Very exciting.
Like two aces, just like our episode. Two exactly. Aces, two editors, two noms.
That's right. Barbecue sauce.
This series really struck a chord with viewers. Did you expect it going in? And, you know, what do you attribute its success to?
I don't think we saw it coming. I mean, I know how I felt about it. I loved it. I remember at the end of season 1, my last day working with Jason, we just didn't know how it was going to land. And I said to him, I was just like, thank you so much for letting me work on this show. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to talk to you ever again, sort of thing. Like, you know, that's kind of happens sometimes where you put your heart and soul into something and then it doesn't reach where you want it to reach and you don't get to come back for season 2. So I had been down that road a few times and really just wanted to like tell him what the show meant to me. So I was so relieved when people loved what I loved about it. And people have been reaching out to me left and right about the show and what it means to them and the message in it. And it's just been amazing to receive all that love and positivity from people. It's like, it just lifts me up. And I'm so happy that, you know, I've had some small part in helping lift up them as well. So it's just been a pleasant, beautiful surprise.
Well, especially during the pandemic, what has it meant to you? Would you want to elaborate?
Yeah, during the pandemic, just being like in your own little island, you know, I hadn't left my house and suddenly people are reaching out to me and I've had students reach out to me and I was Zooming with students in North Carolina and in Chicago, and just people wanting to talk about the show, wanting to talk about how I, you know, found my way to the show. And it's just been a really beautiful connecting with people that I never, you know, imagined.
Which leads to my next question. And I wanted to ask, how did each of you come onto the show?
It's you know, happenstance, I guess. I had met Kip Kroeger a few years back. He was interviewing for editors for another job, and I didn't get that job, but we made a connection. And I think the moral of the story there is, you know, stay in touch with people, because I then had cut a History Channel short film comedy that Jason Sudeikis was in with Dan Harmon, and he spoofed Thomas Edison. And I just always loved his comedy. I mean, you know, I can watch Jason dance for like hours, I think, you know, just take after take. And he was doing some really goofy Thomas Edison rap in this show. It's called Great Minds with Dan Harmon. So I'd love this comedy, and I called up Kip. I'd heard they were doing the show, and I had known nothing about Ted Lasso other than the short films that were out there. And I thought, you know, it was going to be just a simple comedy, like a sketch com. And I remember we weren't going to be editing on the Warner Brothers lot. And I talked to Mel, who I was just meeting. I said, wow, now it's over at Warner Brothers. And this is turning into a big show. And I think when we started getting the scripts, which just trickled in, as we were cutting, we realized it was much, much deeper than a comedy. And it definitely had so much heart and so much behind it. And I'm just so happy that it's resonating.
And what is it like to work with Jason and the other members of the team?
It's amazing to work with Ted Lasso himself, I have to say. you know, not only do we get the benefit of, especially season one, when he would come into the office, he'd be like, let me do that loop line real quick. And he would put on his Ted Lasso voice. And you don't think that it's a real, like, accent, but it really is. Like, it's funny, he like gets into character, and then you, so instead of, you know, one of us having to fill the line badly, you get the actual Ted Lasso line. But also just gosh, just a real visionary for the show and what the show should be, and a real cheerleader, a real supporter. He elevates I think everybody when speaking with the directors, one of them that I worked with this season, she was like, he just, you know, makes you better. And it's true, because he knows all the ins and outs of the show. He knows all the backstory, and he can give you all these tools to inform decisions, you know, in the cutting room, that, is just really fun. And he's not only funny guy, but he's so smart and a real cinephile. Like, he'll bring up scenes from television, from movies. The other day he was talking about a play. I mean, he's just so sharp in his reference points, and really just gives you a touchstone to work from. And it's inspiring and challenging in the best way.
Well, throughout season one, the Ted Lasso character really, you know, changes all of the characters around him. You were both shaping, you know, the arcs of many characters. Do you want to each talk a little bit about, you know, just how you handled those arcs throughout the season and how you shared the duties to keep it so consistent?
I think what helped was having so much of season one open. You know, we were cutting all 10 episodes, it seemed, all at once. I mean, we'd finished them early, but the fact that we could go backwards, like, knowing that, like, you know, I didn't know that when he, in episode one, when he talks about that he doesn't know that soccer is a game that can end in ties, that would be a very critical story point for episode 10. You know, so Ted learns these things, and Jason knows all of this. You know, he's, you know, thought of this series as a three arc, structure in his head from long ago. And he doesn't always share that with everyone. He keeps that, you know, close to the vest. You know, he's always, he's like a great poker player. He's always shuffling cards when he's editing with us. And, you know, it's a way where, you know, to keep him thinking and keep him focused and not getting nervous. So he holds those creative cards close to his vest, but not because, you know, he wants to hold anything back, but he kind of wants us to discover this fresh, and how we react to the footage. He is insightful for him as to what choices to make. But definitely with the characters, you know, I saw very quickly that it was a story about authenticity and vulnerability, that, you know, Keely and Rebecca, you know, could have been competitors, but they became really close friends. You know, Rebecca was dealing with a lot of shadow in her life. And I think this is a huge resonant theme with Jason. And she, you know, learned to grow and to express herself. And every character on the show found his voice. You know, Nate the Kit Man grew into becoming a coach. And Jamie Tart grew into not just being an arrogant prick, as Roy Kent called him, but, you know, feeling empathy. And Roy Kent, that was a big moment for Jason when they set that up early, that, you know, wait till he actually loves us. He's going to be furious then. And then at the end, in the last episode, he Roy Kent just completely melts when he says, "It's hard to love you, Ted." So these are all moments that Jason, you know, worked on with us. He's very intentional. Yes, it's the school of film school of Jason Sudeikis. He knows so many references to so many films and TV shows, and he loves references of books and songs. And when you can find those hidden gems and metaphors, he likes to play with those.
Do you want to give an example?
Well, the Allen Iverson speech is great. I mean, that was something that he came up in episode 6. That was unplanned. It was unscripted. He thought of that probably 2 days before they shot it. We were doing a bit on semantic satiation. I can't even say it. It's when a word is repeated over and over again, like plan. I have a plan. There are two aces. And you just repeat the word and it loses its meaning. So he was trying to find a way to where Ted could finally break down the character Jamie Tart and do it in a way that is, you know, is kind of creative and intuitive. And so he thought of pulling from the Allen Iverson infamous practice speech, which he gave years ago, where he just repeats the word practice is about practice, not the game, over and over again. And he does this with Jamie, and he sent me a transcript on Google, and I had to cut that scene exactly to how Iverson built it. And the fans have appreciated that it mirrors that. And there's just that one great shot when we cut to a 50-50 shot and it's a Dutch angle and Ted is towering over Jamie Tart and he finally breaks him down at that moment. But then Ted pulls back and realizes, okay, now it's about love. I need to express love to Jamie. So that's an example of just a reference from a random point of history, Allen Iverson, that not many people would know. But he's always doing little sports references to films. I mean, I don't want to give a season 2 spoiler, but you'll see it in season 2. There's certain, you know, we're like a show that's like Friday Night Lights or like, you know, The Office. So he'll have little references to famous sports films and that he wants to give them pay homage to. You know, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid or Escape to Victory, the Sylvester Stallone World War II soccer film. So he loves these little details that we bring in.
Yeah, I had a Graduate reference in episode 7. Yeah. It's a, you know, it's very varied. And it's such a, you know, not huge scene, but it's just in episode 7 when the team is headed off on the bus to the game, away game, and Nate's trapped underneath the bus. And he really wanted it to be like, they're on the move. And because we have forgotten that Nate got trapped under that. And so it's the, when he's in his car and he's going, and then it starts to, the music's, you know, the Simon and Garfunkel music starts to like stop. And then he runs in and has that whole scene. And then he gets back out in the car and goes, you know, gets the gas and goes. And so that was the reference point. He was like, it's gotta be like that, where you think that we're going and then the music stops and it's just kind of like, the music's just like, you know, while he's getting out, we play the thing. And then we sweep into the main title. Like he's like, you want to think we're headed towards the main title, but no, oh wait, you forgot. Like, you know, Nate's under there. And so it was just such a like, reference point to like be like, oh, okay, this feel, and like, you know, built a similar music you know, cue under there and did that. But I love The Graduate, so I was just like, oh, this homage, let's do it, like, you know what I mean, like
Well, now that scene is from the episode Make Rebecca Great Again, the one that you're nominated for, Melissa, when they actually travel to an away game in Liverpool. What was your favorite scene to cut in that episode?
Seven is just, the whole episode was really it was a special one for me. Like that, it was just the whole episode I loved. And Jason wrote that episode, and so he was really invested in it as well. So it was really fun to work on it together. And there's so many things in it I love, like, you know, Nate's speech in the locker room that Ted, you know, says, you have to do this. And you don't know what's in that speech. And he starts and it's just so brutally honest. And then it breaks through. Like everybody, it's just such a surprising scene. And it was just such a beautifully performed scene by Nate and the whole team. But I think ultimately, I guess it would have to be the panic attack karaoke scene, because you just had Hannah, like Broadway, you know, Wonder Woman take on the Frozen song. And they had shot an alternate in case we couldn't get that. So I Will Survive was in the warm up, waiting to make its debut if we couldn't get the Frozen song. So, you know, I had those versions, and then weaving in the team, which is gelling. And there's a great cutaway to Roy Kent singing the Frozen song, because of course he would know that from his
Phoebe.
Yeah. And so when I saw that in the dailies, like, that's not scripted. They just find little things like that to pepper in that are so smart and are so character driven. And, you know, I think that just happened in a one-off. Like, it was just like in, cause you, if you can imagine, like a whole team in a karaoke room, there was just a lot of footage, a lot of roving cameras, a lot of like making string outs of footage that I was like, okay, I have to remember this. Like Isaac leans forward, like the tough guy, just gets so into the performance of hers. And, yeah, Roy singing. It was just like all these little moments. I was like, I gotta remember these and pepper them in as she's singing. And then to transition into such a dark moment for Ted.
Because that's the episode also where he's struggling because he has to sign his divorce papers.
Yes, yeah. And so it was a real high and a real low episode. And to make all those moments feel natural and of the story, like I really, you know, spent time trying to honor, okay, we have to foreshadow that maybe Ted's not in a really good headspace here. And so, and then once the panic attack happens, trying to make that very visceral with the cuts to the hands and his shortness of breath. And my assistant did a really amazing temp sound design job with a ringing in his ear. So there's a very like high pitched squeal that, you know, as we got closer to his face, you know, would just start swelling and everything started getting really verby and Hannah's voice started to get more distant, and then traveling him out through that club, jumping him out there and jumping his panic attack at outside. And then we played with, you know, the voices that come in. That was a Jason thing where he wanted to hear his son's voice say, dad, and you heard his wife say Ted, and then you hear Rebecca say Ted, and then she comes into focus. So it's all those things swirling in his head. And that was a Jason ad. He was like, I want to hear maybe dad and his wife. Cause before I had just played Rebecca, Ted, you know, it got closer and closer. So if you listen, those are some fun creative things that Jason brings to the table of really going in character, the character work. He's so invested in the characters. So.
And then, AJ, your nominated episode is the finale of season one, The Hope That Kills You, which concludes with the match where they desperately needed a tie. And at the very end of the game, Jamie Tartt scores that crushing goal. Tell us about cutting that scene.
Wow. Yeah. The Hope That Kills You. You know, that's such a resonant title for the pandemic, isn't it? Jason wanted that, you know, to be finally where Ted confronts this pessimism, you know. And so earlier we introduced the slogan from May, the bartender, that she said, you know, we don't believe in hope in England. It's the hope that kills you. And that really sticks with Ted and realizes that he's got some fundamental work to do with this team. And so before we go to that great end athletic set piece, he's in the locker room challenging that phrase. And he said, well, I choose to believe. And he was very intentional about being on the players at certain time, to be on the beautiful smiling face of Sam Obasanya on asking the question, do you believe in miracles? And it's a very heavy scene. And then we have a funny joke where Isaac, the captain, who's just been given the captain armband by Roy Kent, you know, says Richmond on 12 and they run out. You know, it's that's a funny counting moment. And they get out on the field, and we do, to me, that's where the show returned to its roots of being a goofball sports comedy, because we proceed to do that joke of American football. And our composers, Marcus Mumford and Tom Howe, wrote a great cue for that, which is on the Apple album called American Football. And we basically do an NFL formation and match all those camera angles. And all of that ending scene, by the way, the pub, the crowd, the dugout, Rebecca and Higgins and Keeley watching from the stands, Rupert and his girlfriend watching from their apartment. All of that was filmed, of course, at different times and different days, but the trick was to make it seem as fluid as possible. So, you know, that to me was just hysterical, and getting some reactions from the crowd, like, you know, what is this American doing? But, you know, we have that great moment where we come around to Danny and he kicks it in a bicycle kick. And all that footage was, we just had a few takes of it all, and they really nailed it. It was shot in the pouring rain and in visual effects. We had to balance the rain out so it felt uniform, but we fortunately got it. And the bicycle kick is a callback to Danny doing the same kick and pass from Sam in 106. So that felt good. But Jason wanted it to be a roller coaster. Like, he wanted it to, you know, really trick everyone into believing, like, you know, because he's an avid TV watcher. So he knows, like, because I sniffed these plot points coming a mile away. So clearly you're going to dupe the audience into believing that, you know, they're going to make them win by a tie. And they do. But then Jamie, who Ted has been teaching to be his best self, finally is his best self in the worst moment for Richmond and passes the ball instead of shooting the ball. And because he passes the ball, they score a goal. Richmond are relegated. And then we cue probably the best cue that could have fit for the pandemic times, You'll Never Walk Alone by Marcus Mumford's rendition. And that was a song that was very sung in England during the pandemic for the healthcare workers on the front lines. And, you know, I said this to Mel the other day, you know, I cry cutting this show. And when I was putting that song in and the music came and I watched it, because we cut that to picture there, and it just, the feels and the chills of it, you know, and Jason cried on Zoom too, laughed and cried with me. Like, it was just a powerful moment. And then to go into the locker room after, and he says, you know, look, it's not about wins and losses. It's about being your best self. And it's about being a goldfish. And if you can't win, then, you know, be a goldfish, forget about it, you know, be in the moment and go onward.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Well, the score plays such a big role throughout. Do you want to talk about the music? And it was carefully planned, I know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we can go on and on for music, but I'll say Jason knows a song when he hears it. We're very intentional about the needle drops. I mean, just in episode 10, for example, you know, we put the Sweet Georgia Brown, the theme of the Harlem Globetrotters earlier in the episode when the team's thinking up trick plays that really gelled. And then the ending song, we went around in circles, like, how do we end this series and with what song? And Edith Piaf's Non Je Ne Regrette Rien just really fit well there. That's such a lasso anthem with the words from French. You know, today it begins with you. So that one, Jason heard that. He's like, that's it. That's the one. So yeah, I get to, Mel can talk about how we just always jam in tunes with Mel. When I come into work in the days when we were working at Warner Brothers, listening to Mel jam the Who, the Stones, the Kinks, the Clash. It was just a great hallway to work in right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we spent a lot of time trying to figure out what the vibe of the show was. And yeah, Marcus came in midway and that really like helped us. Cause I think we were trying on a lot of hats, you know, temp score wise. And then, yeah, when I found out Marcus was going to do the music, yeah, it unlocked a lot of elements for us, I think. And then I started listening to Mumford and Sons and found a great Mumford and Sons song to put in for Five, where it was just really, it was like, I was listening to it and I was like, had read the script of Five where his wife basically tells him she doesn't love him anymore. And he sends her, you know, lovingly back in the car and says goodbye. And I was driving into work and I heard the Mumford song where it was like, think of London and the girl you're returning. And I was just like, wow, that's such a beautiful song. We were able to get the instrumental and layer that in for the ending there. But yeah, it's very much a vibe, very much always inspired by what the characters are going through and what the character mindset is or story. But yeah, very character driven, which is really informative and a great place, I feel like, to have your music come in, right? Like it always feels like it has a reason and has an element that you're trying to help with your storytelling.
I asked Melissa about her favorite scene to cut in her episode. AJ, what was your favorite scene to cut in Hope That Kills You?
Wow. Well, I mean, I think you know, I mentioned the Believe speech and the, you know, it's broken up into two parts. It's the speech before the game. And then I guess at the end when he comes through that door and just, you know, he'd just seen Jamie Tartt get yelled at by his dad. And, you know, that really strikes Ted. And he goes into the team and they're just all so depressed. And he tries to cheer them up and the water boy Will hands him a bottle and it just breaks up the tension in a very funny way. I think of both of those speeches because they felt like a two part. So I'd say the first Believe speech and the end speech, but with the roving camera and keeping that camera fluid. Yeah. The entire last half of that show just builds and builds on an emotional ride. And then of course, the very last shot of episode 10, it mirrors exactly the opening shot of episode 1. And that's another example of not knowing these details until we got to the end. But Jason brought that up with me. He said, I asked the director to get the same coverage of Rebecca looking to camera for the end of 10 as we see at the very top of the show when we open on her. We don't open on the main character, Ted Lasso. We open on Rebecca and follow her story. And at the beginning, she's just, you know, sort of very composed on the outside and just sort of, you know, crushed on the inside with all this shadow and issues she's dealing with. By the end of the show, she's very healed and happy on the inside, but an absolute mess on the outside. So she's come full circle.
Do you want to give a shout out to the editorial team?
Always.
Oh, always. That's... Absolutely. Our assistant editors are amazing. Alex Szabo and my assistant and Frank.
Yeah. Francesca Castro.
Mm-hmm. And also our post sound team was all nominated too. I really want to give a shout out to our sound mixing and sound editing team and Marcus and Tom were nominated. So it's just such a, you know, I said that, you know, soccer is like picture editing. Soccer is a game of collaboration. And so we all work together to bring all these facets together and they really make us sound good. And our visual effects team, so much of the show's visual effects that people don't realize we don't play in any stadium. It's all added later. And the show just looks so amazing at the end. So yeah, absolute shout out to the post team, Lasso.
Yep. Lasso post team. Kip Kroger is our producer and Caitlin Hollenbeck is our coordinator and Robbie Stevenson is our, So Robbie's our coordinator. Mm-hmm. Caitlin is our supervisor. Did I say that right? I'm like, And our music editor, Richard, like, I mean, it's just a rock star team. And I said this to Jason, we're working together. I was like, gosh, man, I'm just so proud of everybody this season. Like I was part of everybody's season one, but season two from you know, people who are the guest stars to the production is like everybody is just swinging for the fences and bringing so much creative energy and joy and teamwork and positivity, really, like that it's been a really a joy to work on this show. It feels very special, you know. I feel very lucky. Like I know this doesn't happen everywhere. So I'm trying to soak it up for sure.
Oh yeah, me too.
How tightly scripted is it? Or do they improv?
You know, it's pretty tightly scripted. They, like I said, they come up with like little gems sometimes when they're working, or they'll work out something in the, like for the button of a scene, you know, sometimes a lot of the scene will like the written finish, and then there'll be some little button tacked on, and you can see them working it out in the master. And then by the time you get to your tights, and sometimes they have it all worked out, and then sometimes you kind of have to work a little bit magic to see, like, there's a yes. gem of a joke in here to end on, but like, how do I get it? Cause it's kind of like in a mass of like three different takes, and I have to like, okay, if I steal the sound bite from this, that makes this joke make sense. And then we can really go out on that like hilarious close-up of beard or something, you know what I mean? So that's, I find where a lot of the improv comes. And then they'll have like alt lines. I remember in season one, I think it was episode 9, where they're thinking about benching Roy. They, Coach Beard and Nate sit Ted down and say, like, you know, to tell him, like, we need to bench Roy. But Ted looks at them and goes, uh-oh, like, looks like you guys are about to do improv. And, you know, like, or you guys are going to be, or dating or something. Like, he did some joke like that, but he had written down, like, a line of improv prompts that he thought they could do, sort of thing, like, you know, that he thought they were going to put on an improv show. So I could see Jason like looking at, well, okay, let me do this line now. So like they'll come up with like a list of improv sometimes, but for the most part, it's pretty spot on for script. What do you think, AJ?
Yeah, I agree. They play as they go forward. So the earlier takes, which are masters, then it becomes a bit of a puzzle because they, as Mel says, they discover a joke through the takes and they won't necessarily go backwards and get the footage. So we have to, that becomes a little bit of a puzzle, but we always make it work. Yes. Jason will think of ideas on the set. Like he saw that coat hanger in Rebecca's office that looks like a tree, and out of the blue on one take, it's like high five tree. And then, you know, that just became a gem of, episode 2, and everyone loves that saying. And that was just a one take, one off. You just thought of it. Sometimes the improv is completely unplanned, where he mistimed the leap heading out of Rebecca's office and smashes his head into the door and just recovers and had to go see the set medic. That was all real. And then sometimes there's more in-depth writing that he does, like the Allen Iverson scene that I mentioned, that he thinks about the day or two before, makes some changes, you know, because Jason is a writer, a creator, you know, an actor. And so he's always bringing new ideas in. But yes, the scripts are very well written and the storyline is all there by an amazing team of writers who've really thought this out, and they don't share it with anyone beyond themselves. Like, we don't necessarily know how, you know, when we were cutting season one, we didn't know how it was going to end. Same with season two. And, you know, I don't know what any of the arcs are going forward. I'm like the audience. I'm what's going to happen to Richmond.
I know a few. Jason drops a few nuggets, but got those locked down.
Well, what I would tell, I mean, this isn't a spoiler, but I would just tell fans of the show, like, what you see in the show that you love, you know that it's intentional and that those things are probably going to continue, because Ted is a very, you know, he's way wiser than a barbecue sauce loving country bumpkin. So he, you know, things that you see will carry forward and little moments that they'll be there. It's very intentional television. So, you know, I can assume and guess what storylines will happen, but excited to discover it.
So season two will be available tomorrow. In the first episode, we're going to catch up with our characters. We're going to meet Roy Kent adjusting to retirement. We are seeing Danny Rojas after a traumatic penalty kick. And Jamie has taken a chance at reality TV. And the series also has a new sports psychologist for the team. So with all of these things, what can you tell us about season two?
Just buckle up, basically, is what I, you know, I just like season one. It is a ride. And I think that you will get to the end and you will have laughed, you will have cried, and you will have fallen way more deeply in love with these characters. I know I did. I'm just in awe of our cast. Like, they are amazing. They did amazing work this season, and I'm so excited for everybody to see it. I mean, you know, we all, I think, really love the fan support, and so we all, I know I worked, and every day I was like, this is my love letter to Roy. This scene, I want Roy to be the best Roy Kent in this scene, you know, grumpy, whatever, whatever, the ultimate Roy. This is my love letter to him, you know. And then Beard, I had an episode with Beard that I was just like, love, oh God, you know, I poured so much love into that episode where I'm just like, I want everybody to see these, what amazing work these guys are doing. So anyways, I think everybody did an amazing job this season, and I'm so proud of everybody. Not a lot of spoilers, but people are growing. The character growth is huge this season, I think.
Let's talk about Roy a little. What can you tell us about Roy in this season?
Oh,
he's retired now, but
yes, and he will go on a journey. I don't know what I can say, but you know, I had the pleasure of cutting episode 5, and I think that is a big, you know, that's a big Roy Kent episode, and if you love Roy Kent, yeah, make it to episode 5, and I think you'll be excited to see where his character journey goes.
He's here, he's there, he's every fucking way.
Like,
right?
Yeah. He's, you know, sure, he's grumpy, but you get a little bit more Phoebe, you get Roy and Keeley, and you get Roy and, you know, you get a little bit of new Roy. In his same grouchy shell, which I think is like the best Roy. You know, you get the grouch, but you always get to see his like soft, gooey center.
I love it. Yeah, Brett has really mastered that character. I love how he walks into rooms with his chest stuck out, and he's very, yeah, a lot of grunting and anger, and you know, and not much. He didn't smile much season one. You know, it's when he does, it's for, you know, rare reasons, like he's enjoying a laugh at Jamie Tart's expense. But yeah, I agree, this cast is really gelled together. You can feel it, absolutely. They just know each other's rhythms and each other's timing, and they're, you know, that we had so many choices to choose from in performance, and they all were wonderful, and that that became a puzzle to put them all together. Hannah Waddingham, you know, is a superstar. And so is Juno Temple.
They are.
And they just all are. I mean, and Nate's storyline's amazing, and Sam, and and Coach Beard is always there. The, you know, just wait and see how many books he's going to read and bring on set this year. You know,
exactly.
so much hidden gems.
Do you get a lot of takes to work with?
You know, not more than most in TV. You know, you're lucky in TV to get 3. You know, sometimes if we're lucky, if they're really on a roll, we'll get 5. I mean, but they really nail it. It's like, I don't know how they do it. If they obviously are rehearsing off camera, but when they roll those cameras, that performance by the second or third take is spot on, and it's there.
Not a lot of miss-ups, and there's a lot of dialogue. I'm always, and that's from everybody. Like, even, you know, guest stars that come in for just the day of work, they just have that, they have that dialogue down, you know, they have a clear voice and vision, and they deliver it. And Hannah's especially wonderful to cut, because she gives you such subtle changes from take to take, such smart, subtle changes. Like, you know, like, oh, maybe you want a shade of this in this speech, you know? And so I remember in season one, going through takes with Jason, with that speech outside the ballroom, when she finally opens up to Ted, it's like, take one, you have shame, and take two, you know, she just kind of blurts it out, and take three, she's finding her words. But they were all choices, and they were all beautiful choices. And so you were kind of like, direction do we want to take this speech? You know, you can, any way you go, it's an award-winning speech. Like, that woman is talented in so many different ways. It's a pleasure to watch.
Melissa, what can you tell us about Rebecca's character arc in season two?
Her character arc is more personal to her and her growth. And I think, you know, what she's looking for in another person. I think she's discovering her worth and as a, you know, out there in the world, and is leading in love and grace this season, which is a beautiful place to start from with her, because that's the opposite of where we started last season. So you really get to see Hannah unleashed, I'll say, in episode five. I was talking about it today with my assistant, of just how, where do you see her? Like, you know, her hair is loose and they have her in this beautiful dress and she's just owning her, you know, happiness that I think Ted brought out. And it's shining through in her appearance, even in this season. She's just a little more free. And yeah, I think in one scene, she has her shoes off and she's just got her feet kicked up. And I think you'll see her in a different location in the office as well. Like, they, you know, they did smart things with her character where you just see, you know, she's not behind the desk so much. She's opened up to the room and more welcoming of people that are coming into her office, maybe. So it's more open, wild Rebecca this season, which is really fun.
It's because I think the scheming is gone with Rebecca. You know, she, Ted and her have come together, and so there's no more secret plotting with her. So what you do see with Rebecca, yeah, is more of an open, like, I want to be more authentic and relate more to people. And that applies to all the characters. You know, they know each other now, so their relationships are going to get deeper, get more intense, and we're going to see, you know, the both good and bad, you know, yin and yang of each of their personalities come forward. You know, it's going to be the very best of them, and in some ways the worst of them. And then the worst, of course, makes for some great comedy and great tension.
Well, congratulations on your Emmy nominations, and thank you so much for coming down to join
us. Thank you for having us. What an honor.
Thank you. Thank you for having us, Hollywood Reporter. But heaven knows I try.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.